Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
More daytime shootings, more shootings at close range. We had a triple homicide in Ward 7 that was done at feet from the victims. There was not a question of the outcome.
That's D.C.'s Deputy Mayor of Public Safety, Kevin Donahue, speaking yesterday about the violent and deadly weekend in the district. But this conversation isn't just about this past weekend. D.C. is on track to have even more an even more deadly year than last year, with 18 murders so far in 2019. Last year, this time, there were 11. What can be done to stop the growing homicide rate in D.C.? Joining me to talk about this are ANC Commissioner D.L. Humphrey, representing part of Ward 7. Also, Gary Clark, CEO and founder of Pep Rally for Peace in the Streets in D.C. He is a community activist in Ward 8. If you have a comment, if you have a question, if you have a concern about the homicide rate in D.C., give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. D.L., Gary, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Errol Fisher. I'm always a fan of this show.
Thank you so much. Gary, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you so much, Harold. Loving what you do, and these things are needed. We need to talk. Our city needs to come together, so thank you.
Thank you so much. I want to start with you, DL. What should be done to stem the tide of homicides in the district?
Well, we got to first identify that we do have a problem here in the city. Real community policing, I believe that they're training now. I believe the mayor's going to hire more police officers. But my thing is that what's going to happen when it comes to the training of these police officers, being able to deal with this community? And so right now we have a tale of two cities. You know, we have on one side of the city, you hear the bang, 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 and you hear the buildings being put up. You have cranes and everything. But on the other side of the city, you hear the bang, 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 and then next thing you know, you hear of homicides and deaths and bodies are dropping. The streets are suffering out here. And we need to take a real look at what we're doing as far as making sure that we have this no snitching policy in our own community. But yet the people in our community are the ones who are committing the crimes.
Mm-hmm. Gary, let me ask you, what do you think about that idea of community policing? We've been hearing about that for decades.
Yes, we have. And we, being a resident here in the city since the age of 6 years old, I've seen so many things happen, change, come about. At one time when we had, remember, we had the orange hats and people patrolled and got out and walked, and there was less fear amongst the community at that time. Right now we have fear amongst the residents in Ward 8 and Ward 7 because of the situation at hand, all the murders and homicides that are going on. And it's amongst our own people. And for us to come up with answers to stop this, it has to be amongst us. We have to get out and be visible. We have to let young people, and the age range is amongst a lot of our young people, and as elders have to stand up and take charge and let it be known that we're not having this anymore. We cannot afford to continually lose lives amongst ourselves, young people who have yet to even live their lives, and stand back and not say anything and not allow anything to happen as an answer. And so we're hoping, I'm praying that conversations like this, what WHUR, Harold, and you guys are doing will help create a platform so that we can get together, come together, walk our streets. Don't be afraid to walk our streets. And some of the young people that may tune into your station need to know that the lives you save may be your own. Stop killing one another. Bottom line, we have to stand up and be stronger. Back in the days of riots and before, we came together as a community. We have to do it again.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the growing D.C. homicide rate. 2019 is starting the same way that 2018 ended, with a growing homicide rate. If you have a comment, if you have a question or a concern, give us a call. The lines are open at 202-319-7810. So, DL, with the mayor's proposal to hire some 400 police officers over several years, what does community policing, from your perspective, look like? I mean, you just can't hire cops and throw them on the street.
Absolutely. In my ward, we have a commander, Habibullah, and I'm going to tell you, she is really has taken the lead and the initiative to say, I want to see these officers out here talking to neighborhood, talking to neighbors, actually speaking to these neighbors, and who do you know on these particular blocks? That type of approach is what we need right now in the city. If we do not have an approach of, we have to take a different approach. What we was doing is not working. It's just simply not working. We have so many, when we talk about our vice unit, they took that away. And then next thing you know, we look at our gun recovery unit. I mean, we have to make sure we have some serious quality of life issues. So as far as community policing, the police have to actually know their neighborhood. They need to know. I mean, if they do not know, if they grew up in the city and grew up in the hood and they then go on to be a police officer, the neighbors will respect them and the people will respect them because they say, you know what? I remember that brother when he was out there, and now he is a police officer, and now he's trying to protect that neighborhood.
With that said, we've seen community policing or officers who walk the beat. We've seen them in some neighborhoods on Capitol Hill. We've seen them in entertainment districts. We've seen them in the shopping districts downtown and in Georgetown. But why haven't we seen them in the neighborhoods?
I agree with you. I mean, the problem is that, and I hate to say this, but the government needs to make sure that they take a real look at an approach of saying, you know what, we're going to let the police. Stop trying to be, I'm sorry, I'm an ANC commissioner, I work for, you know, the councilman, all this type of stuff, but I am not the type of person that, I do not take any training class when it comes to police. So I don't know what that police looks like. So we need to make sure that the government takes a step back, give them the abilities, give them the financial resources that the police need in order for them to really police these streets.
Mm. Gary, I want you to listen to this and react on the other side. We had an opportunity to talk to a Ward 8 council member, Trayon White, today, and this is one of the things that he shared with us.
There's been a series of neglect when it comes to residents in poverty and low-income neighborhoods in D.C., specifically in Wards 5, 7, and 8. And as a leader of Ward 8, I've been lobbying my council colleagues and the mayor to put resources into the pot to deal with youth violence prevention, to address the mental health services, the substance abuse services, and career and education. And for far too long, it's been neglected. For example, we only put $750,000 in 2017 in the budget for prevention. That's a drop in the bucket when we're talking about a $14.5 billion budget. And I guess next year, 2018, $1.7 million.
Is he right, Gary?
He's absolutely right. And I applaud Councilman Trayon for his statement and what he's saying. And I listened to what the ANC commissioner had just said, and he's absolutely correct. We do have to get the police officers more known in the community and make them more visible. But also, what becomes very important, and this is my concern with Pep Rally for Peace in the Streets, what we concern is that we as citizens and communities in our communities get to know one another. We have to start knowing. We're shutting our doors. We're not knowing each other like we used to. We have to get to know. So now we start, when we see each other walking together, we see each other conversing on fronts and knocking on each other's doors, now we are more supporting one another and becoming an answer to the problem. Yes, policing is a great thing, and we do need more police, and definitely we need more funding to come into the wars that the councilman member just mentioned. However, it starts at home with us. We have to start being in each other's space and talking about these issues and not closing the doors and turning our backs and being afraid to step up to save the lives of 14 and 11-year-old young people who are being shot by drive-bys and situations of such. This has to stop. And we have, we're advocating here with Pep Rally for Peace to create a wall. Like you have the wall down on the Mall of Veterans. We need a wall of falling too soon. Young people who have fallen too soon and their lives have not even gotten started. These things we have to do ourselves. There was a time when our communities depended on one another. Mm-hmm. We have to get back to that, depending on one another. Policemen are great, but we can do it ourselves. We can do it, people in this city. We have to stand up.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about murder in D.C., the rising homicide rate. What are the answers to curtail the bodies dropping in the street? Let's go to the phone lines. Roz, calling from Southeast D.C. Roz, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Roz, can you hear me?
I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead. Turn your radio down. What's on your mind?
Hi. What I was saying is a lot of people in the neighborhood and the communities would get more involved if it was more protection for them. They end up being the victims because most of the shooting and the killing that's going on in our area, someone knows who's doing what. But for us to step up and say, look, we saw so-and-so or Joe Blow shoot this person, and we know exactly who they are, where they live, and then we end up dead because we're stepping up. And it needs to be some protection for people so that we can not be afraid to speak up and tell what's going on in our community.
Thank you so much, Roz. I appreciate that. Now, see, Here's the thing, DL, because Chief Peter Newsham and before him Kathy Lanier, both of them talked a great deal about communities coming forward and letting police know who is behind some of these crimes. Micaiah Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
That was a prime example of that. But if those things are truly working, and there's a track record of those things working, why aren't we getting more community participation?
Well, like I said before, I think the problem is that we scream this Black Lives Matter stuff. You know, we scream that all the time. You hear people saying it, Black Lives Matter. But the problem is Black Lives only matter when it's white police officers shooting them. Why not Black Lives Matter when it's us shooting us? And so that's the problem that we got to really look at is that, hey, why are you sitting back? You know good and well that Joe and Lil Pookie and Ray Ray are the ones out here committing the crimes. You see them walking up and down the street every day. And just like the gentleman stated, hey, we need to pull those people up. We need to make sure that we take them in and start talking to them and start giving them some hope, some direction. We got a high epidemic with opioid abuse. I mean, we got a high rate as far as the mental health issues in Ward 7 and 8.
Mm-hmm.
People need to know, look, we know that you're not right, that there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to actually do something about it.
I've got a lot to get to, and I want to bring Gary back into this conversation. But before I go to a break in a minute or so, I need to announce, I was just handed this information right before going on the air, that a D.C. Council member, Charles Allen from Ward 6, is holding a public oversight roundtable. That's tomorrow at 11 a.m. It's at the Wilson Building in room 123. It is an oversight roundtable on preventing violent crime. This is open to the public. It's called Next Steps in the District's Public Health Based Approach to Violence Prevention and Intervention. And I want to get into that conversation after the break about public health based approaches to violence prevention and exactly what is happening, why these things are happening on our streets in D.C. We do not want to go back to the wild, wild west, the Dodge City, the murder capital of the nation. We've got to figure out how this is going to be taken care of. So please stay with us. Jeff from Maryland, we're going to talk to you next. Joe from Maryland, we're also going to talk to you. Lines are still open. We'll take as many phone calls as we can at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the murders, the homicide rates in the nation's capital. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about the rising homicide rate in the District of Columbia. My guests are ANC Commissioner D.L. Humphrey, representing part of Ward 7. Also, Gary Clark, CEO and founder of PEP Rally for Peace in the Streets in D.C. He is a community activist in Ward 8. Let me go back to a conversation that we had earlier today with Ward 8 Councilmember Trayon White. And this goes to the heart, I believe, of one of the critical issues regarding the rising homicide rate in the district.
Traditionally, I grew up doing youth violence prevention and doing a nonprofit field. We had about 150 workers in the field. Right now, we have about 30 to 40 workers in the field that have to cover 8 wards. We have about 32 crews in Ward 8 alone, and so that's not sufficient. And they're not working specifically in the schools, and there's no coordinated effort with government agencies. So we have to be more strategic and forceful. You know, desperate times calls for desperate measures. We're in a state of emergency when it comes to crimes in Washington, D.C., more specifically east of the Anacostia River.
D.L., first of all, for those of you who are listening outside the D.C. area who may not be familiar with the language here, he said, you know, we have these crews that are commonly known as gangs, but here in D.C. we call them crews, same difference. He said that this is a state of emergency and that there needs to be, paraphrasing, a bit of a more holistic approach to dealing with that, the issue of homicide. What does that mean to you, D.L.?
Well, what it means is this to me. You can have one person, let's take one juvenile, and that juvenile could be touched by multiple agencies. That could be SOSA, DYRS.
Explain those for those who aren't familiar with
those. I'm sorry.
Those, please.
So you have the court supervision office, which they oversee the different ex-offenders and returning citizens that come into our neighborhood. And then you have DYRS, which is Department of Youth and Rehabilitative Services. And so they oversee, of course, the youth and any juveniles that's in crime that has gone, you know, down the wrong path. So they can be touched by Metropolitan Police Department. So many different agencies could touch them, but the problem is not one of these agencies is collaborating with the other one. So they don't know what's going on with this. So now I had one young lady that she was touched by 7 different district government agencies and no one was talking to each other. And so when you have situations like that, that you have to have, like as the councilmember stated, you have to have a holistic approach. I mean, my councilmember, Councilman Gray, is saying it all the time. You just can't have one person dealing with these people and no one is talking to them. And that's the problem.
Gary, you were here during the open-air drug markets, the crack cocaine epidemic. But now we're hearing less about homicides connected to the drug trade and more of them just connected to beefs. People who are just mad at each other and are trying to solve their problems through violence. In your work, what's that about? What has changed?
I mean, the change, Harold, and I agree wholeheartedly with Councilman.
With the ANC commissioner.
Brother DL. Collaborating, first let me address that. And that's been a pet peeve for Pet Rifle Peace and for myself for a long time. You have many agencies, and this is something that trickles down through the system all the way from the government and everything. And I'm going to step out and say it. Yes. When you can't find the Democrats and Republicans working together, then the government agencies don't work together, then the communities don't work together, and these are the results that you get out of all of that. If you get the results of the young people saying, hey, if I have a beef, I'm going to settle it the way I see best I can, through violence. And we know that's not an answer, but where are they getting the weapons from? Where are they getting the drugs from? Where are these things materializing from? Where are they coming from? And we can put the foot down, like the brother Treyon said, this is a state of emergency. If it was a state of emergency in Georgetown or somewhere else, you would see of those many police trailers set up. You would see the streets lit up. You would see constant visibility of our officers and authorities to counteract it. We're not getting that in Ward 8. We're not getting that in Ward 7 and 5. What we're getting is the glorified news reports about individuals being shot and things of that sort. And until the government, our city, starts to pour in, and I know they're doing a great job, I'm not putting them down, but more needs to be done. We're talking about human being lives that are being lost here in the year 2019. How much have we advanced, or are we still going, rolling back or moving backwards? And we have to step up. I understand what the young lady said about the fact of they need protection in the community, because if they speak out, then they become the victims. But at the same token, we come from a culture of people that we've been victimized for hundreds of years. But now we're victimizing ourselves, and that's something that should touch each and every one of us across the board. Why are we destroying ourselves here in the nation's capital that we helped build and create and make, and now we're allowing our young people to be lost and not feeding them the right information, morals, and principles and standards so that they would change their minds? These are things that have to be addressed.
Let me go back to the phone lines at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jeff, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Jeff. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm calling tonight to say that when I was a young man, my mom, my dad separated. I had a very hard life. My grandmother took me in and raised me on a farm. I thought about doing a lot of devilish things in life. I went to church and I got on my knees one night and I stayed standing in the corner and cried to myself and asked the Lord to please help me. He found a way for me, and now I have my own business, opened up my business. I've been successful for 16 years. These kids need a father to be in their life, too, or somebody that's going to be there and care for them. I'm telling you, a lot of these kids are having it hard because there's a lot of dads getting locked up. They ain't there for the kids. You know, you got to be there for your kids, too. So I have a son and a daughter. I was working two jobs, man, to be there for them because I didn't want them to go through what I went through in life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, I thought of many times of doing devilish things, but I had to think positive and not negative, because these kids ain't got no, a lot of them ain't got no dads in their life, so they thinking negative. You think negative, you see negative, you're going to react negative.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for sharing that with me. And I think that kind of piggybacks on what Gary was just saying, DL. He was talking about strengthening those moral fibers and guidance. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have that,
mm-hmm.
if that foundation mm-hmm. is cracked,
yeah.
then even if those fathers or mothers or what have you are around, if they are not getting the right message to the young people,
mm-hmm.
what difference does it make?
You're absolutely right. I mean, you got to think we have, it's an old saying, ships don't sink because the water gets in or around them. Ships sink because water gets in them. And so whatever, don't let what goes on in your environment get in you, because it will sink you and bring you down. And that's what we have, is that these children out here, they're suffering. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, I had my mother and father, and thank God for both of them. They're still alive to this day. And the one thing is that I remember the simple things. We had certain things that was such as simple as a dinner table. The problem is now you go into the black communities, a lot of black homes now, they don't even have a dinner table to sit down on. A lot of conversations happen at the dinner table.
But can we turn back the clock in every household? How do we move forward? I mean, yeah, I had those things too.
Mm-hmm.
But if these things are not there, how do we keep up with the times and still provide a safe environment for communities, for the young people that are involved, and even some of these older young adults mm-hmm. that are behind these crimes?
Yeah.
Earl, if I could,
sure,
if
sure,
I could say this, it comes down, it's a simple thing, and you hear a lot of people, as Brother DL just referenced, his family and the upbringing and whatever. And people always say, when I was a kid and I did something wrong, my neighbor would spank me and then take me home and I get a beating. Well, guys, and people in the city, it's about elders. In the culture of our people in Africa or wherever you want to look at, slavery, whatever, the elders stood up and the elders took charge. The elders set the pace. We as elders, and I'm proud to say I'm 60 years of living here in the city, and I didn't think I would make it after going through prison, drug addiction, and all that kind of good stuff, but I'm here today making a change, changing my life. We have to do things that the elders step up and set the pace and stop letting the young people run, because they don't know. They're scared. They want love. And until we start showing them the love and supporting them and encouraging them and being stern to them, they will continue to do the things that they do. Casualties are going to happen. We know that. But we can stop this thing. But we have to come together. WHUR does a great job with the Daily Drum. Harold, I applaud you. You guys come out. You speak. You put the word out. Other radio stations have to do it also. The collaboration has to be even with the media, with the radio stations. This thing can't be one night a week. It can't be one month. One night, a month, or when the crisis rises. No, the answers, it has to be constantly answered and put out there. There are a lot of young people, many young people who are great and doing great in our city and achieving well, and they don't fall under this whole system of what we're talking about here, but they don't get talked about. What gets glorified is the killings and the robberies and the stealings and whatever. So we have to change it and start saying, hey, we're going to look at the positive. And the positive will always outweigh the negative, but we're not putting it out there. We're not supporting our young people. We're not giving them the directions that they, instead, we're allowing them to choose their own directions. And as a young, when I was young, I chose my own direction and made many a mistake. But I know if we grab ourselves as a people, as a city, as elders, as our culture has taught us to do, this thing will change. It will change. There's some young person that's mm-hmm. listening right now that has a gun, that has a drug, and saying, wait a minute, some of that makes sense. I can change. But if they don't hear it, and they will never receive it, and they can't get it.
Well, let
we
me,
have to do better at that.
Let me see what Joe from Maryland has to say. Joe, go right ahead. What's on your mind?
Oh, you there?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, I don't know if you all are actually familiar with this situation, but in About a year ago in Baltimore, they had white guys riding around selling guns out of the trunk, and the crime rate skyrocketed in Baltimore. There's no doubt they're doing the same thing in D.C., but you'll never find them because they don't stop them people.
Hmm. Yeah, thank you, Joe, for that. And here's the other thing. The mayor has been saying for quite some time about the availability of guns on the street. Last week, the Washington Post did an investigative story about a man who, for years, was getting guns from outside of D.C. You can't buy a gun in D.C. legally, right. But you can't in Virginia, certainly, mm-hmm. and in other states. And they're coming into the district. From your perspective, DL, how much is the availability of guns contributing to this, or is that just a smaller part of a bigger picture?
No, it's definitely a large part, because if you have the access to illegal weapons, illegal drugs, anything, then that's what happens. I mean, you're going to definitely see that people start saying, now we have street justice all of a sudden. And they're not going to take you to the problem. They don't have conflict resolution. And one of the most dangerous things is a man that don't know how to check his own emotions. And that's what we have. And I mean, when you have a man that can't control his emotions, how are you going to raise a child? And how are you going to do certain things in life? And so when you have the access to guns and the availability to guns, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah. I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Valerio Holding from D.C. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the D.C. homicide rate, violence in the street. What can be done about it? We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about the rising homicide rate in the District of Columbia. Let me go back to the phone lines with Valerio calling from D.C. Valerio, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
You know, it's funny. I want to say thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
Shout out to the men on air now. Y'all saying some amazing stuff. We're having a discussion right now on Nextdoor, mm-hmm. and I live in Hillcrest. That's the southeast, mm-hmm. Ward 7. And the discussion that we're talking about is the values, right? We're at a place where the values in our society are conflicting with our reality. But not to talk about, you know, that and belabor that, but at the end of the day, what are we going to do differently, right? And what we can do differently as a community is to engage and galvanize and empower ourselves to be more of a community, right? So we can interject, right, and be more closely connected and involved with one another. And I think we don't do that enough. We allow our neighbors to get away from us, right? We don't participate in our communities like we're supposed to. We don't involve ourselves in the civic process like we're supposed to. We don't hold our police officers accountable. We just had 3 deaths in the neighborhood next to mine in Fort Davis, and the gentleman who witnessed the deaths reported that to the police, right? And the police did nothing with the information until it was too late. We got to hold community accountable. We got to hold our government officials accountable. We got to hold police accountable.
Let me, Valerio, stop you for a moment. You said that he witnessed it and reported it to police, but they didn't do anything with the information.
Okay, so
what do you mean by until it was too late? Because if he witnessed it, from what I understand, these men were dead. If you reported to the police, I'm not sure I understand what you mean by that.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So, again, I'm participating in an online discussion.
Sure.
In Nextdoor. So what he's saying on Nextdoor is that he saw the conflict ensuing, and he reported that this was odd for his block. And he reported the conflict to the police officers, and they dismissed him and didn't do anything with the information. And then hours later, he has dead bodies on his block.
I see. Yeah.
So when we talk about people don't want to report, but when people do report, you know, it's like, oh, now you have a guy who is traumatized because this traumatic event happened, and he did the right thing. He reported a conflict, right? But the officer allegedly sat on the information, and then hours later, you got three dead bodies, right?
Yeah.
That's his testimony, and that's what we're talking about on Next Door.
So
you have a guy who did the right thing, who spoke up and tried to get involved, and nothing happened with the information. So there's a number of scenarios out here, but as a community, we just got to press forward. And my solution, like my recommendation to him would be file a complaint with MPD, go to IAD, right? And then join your civic association and press your civic association to get involved with the ANCs and the city council and get your orange hats back, get your neighborhood watch back. I mean, I grew up in this town. I've seen all kinds of crazy, right? But I've also seen good, too. And I think we got to celebrate the good with the bad.
Yeah.
And then we just got to keep pressing forward.
Valerio, thank you so much for that. See, you know, DL, I think this gets to the heart of it. If, you know, what Valerio was suggesting is completely accurate, and I have no reason to think that it isn't, this wasn't about a drug beef.
Mm-hmm.
This was a dispute,
mm-hmm.
an argument that turned violent. And, you know, I was saying to you before the show started that, you know, this dealing with these kinds of disputes this isn't just a DC problem.
Mm-hmm.
This is, this is a serious problem. Senator Rand was just awarded $580,000 after a physical dispute with his neighbor.
Right, right.
And so, you know, how much longer did that have to last, that dispute, that fight, that physical conflict before one of them was killed?
Mm-hmm.
And so I would argue, Gary, that we are having an issue with conflict resolution. Nobody is teaching our children, our teenagers, our young adults about it. I was just talking to DL about this during the commercial, where the Benning Road shooting where the guy shot and killed another guy, a young man, over a girl. Well,
yes.
And I said to DL, yeah, can I do that? When I was growing up, my father said to me, if you got mad because the girl that you like started dating another guy, he would say, there are other girls that you will meet. Forget about it. Keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
Is that happening? Are those conversations happening, Gary?
No, they're not. Let me say this. Being a resident of D.C., bringing my son up, Gary Jr., and Brentwood Northeast and all over D.C., and him going through things. My son is now a graduate of the University of Nebraska, just wrote a book, Unlikely Viking, because he overcame and changed and went on to be successful. But he tells about all the mishaps and things that happened here in the city while he was living here and growing up with me and going through the changes that I went through. But the point in this is that he looked at that, he saw that, he changed his life. We have to be willing to open up and teach our young people to express and talk. Like someone said earlier, there are mental issues in our community. There are many, many issues in our community that need to be addressed. And yes, one of the ways that we have to start working together. We can talk about all the things we want. We can talk about the policing, but what are we doing family-wise? Where are we engaging with each other community-wise, neighbor-wise? Do you know your neighbor? Do you know the person next door? Do you know her children? And so on and so forth. These things become important. This is how the police should come in the neighborhood, and we should be saying, who are you? Introduce yourself, because we are a neighborhood. We are a community. And until we start engaging one another, the fear is going to be there, closing our doors and shutting our shutters. But guess what? It doesn't stop a bullet from flying through the window.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop a person from being hurt. What stops that is by us letting the young people know. And guys, realistically, we have to keep in mind, guns aren't made here in D.C. Drugs aren't made here in D.C. And there was a time when it was all over D.C. Why is it now that Ward 5, Ward 7, and Ward 8 are the places that are plagued with all of these issues? We have to look at that and address it in the right manner, in which some of this is about buildings and changing the community and changing the city. And we have to look at these things and address them in the proper manner. It's sad that our young people are the ones that are being affected the most by this and dying on our streets by this, so that corporates and other people will benefit from it. But we have to show them and teach them and let them know that they are loved. But first we have to show that we are loved.
Yeah.
And we have to work together. We really do.
Let me go to Jason. Jason calling from Northwest D.C. Jason, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Jason, are you there? Give me a call back if you can. What part do you believe jobs and other issues of economic opportunity play in all of this deal?
Well, one thing, I'm going to flip the strip a little bit. I think one thing that we have not spoke about, and we're kind of dancing around it, is the whole piece when it comes to religion. And you know, one thing that I'm going to say is this, is that in the schools, the Bible is condemned. They don't want them to pray and don't want the people to, if you are Islamic or whatever, they don't want you to do that type of stuff. But in jail, those type of things are exalted. They want you to, man, every jail got a Bible and all kinds of stuff in it. And it's amazing to me that in the school system, they don't want you to do certain things as far as prayer, but as far as the jail, they want you to do it. And so if we can get to these children while they're in school and start teaching them, it's amazing to me. On another note is that these children out here, we don't have the classes in which that could teach a young man how to tie a necktie. But how can we expect him to get a job if he can't even tie a necktie?
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time I came into a room full of young black men. About 100 black men, and I said, I took my necktie off, and I said, I'll give $100 to whoever can tie this necktie. None of them can do it. And so it's amazing to me that, you know, certain things are not being taught, but we want them to be, we think they're going to learn on their own by osmosis. I don't know how they're going to learn it, but if a certain person cannot, it's quality of life issues. If a person cannot eat, they're going to find a way.
Yeah.
And so that's just all it is. I mean, you know.
Brother DL, you hit the nail on the head. We still do have liquor stores all over the city. But you know what we have more of all over the city? We have churches.
Mm-hmm.
We have churches all over the city.
Mm-hmm.
And the elders go to the churches and they dress up on Sunday. But are they coming out into the community?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Are the churches taking the congregation? I love you have a mega church and you got 10,000 people on a Sunday. Take those people into the street.
Mm-hmm.
Let them converse amongst the people. Let them converse amongst the young people. Let them show them all the morals and principles are still there, but they're not being shared. They're not being given to those who really need it. Don't hoard it in the church. Don't hoard it in the building. Bring it to the streets where people can know it. Hold your 10,000 congregation service on a Sunday in the streets of Southeast.
Yeah.
Come out the building and come into the streets.
Well, I am going to have to end the conversation there as I am out of time. But I want to thank both of you, D.L. Humphrey, ANC Commissioner. Thank you so much for sharing with us. Also, Gary Clark, thank you so much. And listen, Gary, is your son back in town?
He's coming back soon. He's still in Nebraska. We're launching the book. He will be here soon.
Listen, when he comes back, reach out to us. I Googled it. It came up. We would be interested in talking to him about his experiences from D.C. to Cornhusker country and back. So
absolutely, I will, Harold. I'll get back with you on that.
Thank you so much. I really
thank
appreciate
you, Harold,
it
for having us. Definitely.
Absolutely, and we'll keep talking about this as well. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, January 30th, 2019. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for the connection. Good night.